Chapter 26. But she'd make the fur fly. When she'd get into them tantrums, she always had one word that she said. She'd straighten herself up and put her fists in her hips and say, I want you to understand that I want on in the mash, to be fooled by trash. I's one of the lay blue hen's chickens, I is. Apostrophe Cassie, see, that's what folks that spawn in Maryland calls diesels, and they's proud of it. Well, that was her word. I don't ever forget it, because she said it so much, and because she said it one day, when my little Henry tore his wrists awful, and most busted his head, right up at the top of his forehead, and the niggers didn't fly around fast enough to tend to him. And when they talk back at her, she up and she says, look a he. Apostrophe apostrophe she says, I want you niggers to understand that I want on in the mash, be fooled by trash. I's one of the lay blue hen's chickens, I is. Apostrophe apostrophe and then she clarred that kitchen and bandage up the chili herself. So I says that word too, when I's riled. Well, bimeby my olay missed his say she's broke, and she got to sell all the niggers on the place. And when I heed that day gwine to sell us all off at auction in Richmond, oh, the good gracious. I know what that mean. And Rachel had gradually risen, while she warmed to her subject, and now she towered above us, black against the stars. They put chains on us, and put us on a stand as high as dispatch, 20 foot high, and all the people stood around, crowds and crowds. And they'd come up die and look at us all round, and squeeze our arm, and make us get up and walk, and then say, this one to olay, apostrophe or this one lame, or this one don't mount too much. Apostrophe apostrophe and they sold my olay man, and took him away, and they begin to sell my chillin and take them away, and I begin to cry, and the man say, shut up yo damn blubberin, apostrophe and hit me on the mouth with his hand. And when the losses one was gone, but my little Henry, I grab him close up to my braso, and I riss up and says, you shan't take him away, apostrophe I says, I'll kill the man that touch him, apostrophe I says. But my little Henry whisper, and say I gwine to run away, and then I work and buy yo freedom oh, bless the chili, he always so good. But they got him, the men did. But I took, and teared the claws mose off of em, and beat em over the head with my chain, and they give it to me too, but I didn't mind that. Well, da was my olay man gone, and all my 7 chillen and 6 of 'em, I ain't set eyes on agin to this day, and that's 22 year ago losses Easter. The man that bought me bong in New Bern, and he took me da. Well, bimeby the years roll on and the wow come. My marster he was a Confederate colonel, and I was his family's cook. So when the Unions took that town they all run away, and left me all by myself with the other niggers in that monstrous big house. So the big Union officers move in da, and they ask me what I cook for them. Lord bless you, apostrophe says I, that what I's for. Apostrophe, they want no small fry officers, mind you, the was the biggest they is. And the way they made them soldiers mosey round. The gen he told me to boss that kitchen, and he say, if anybody come meddling with you, you just make them walk chalk. Don't you be afeard, apostrophe he say, you's mom friends now. Apostrophe, well, I thinks to myself, if my little Henry ever got a chance to run away, he'd make to the north, of course. So one day I comes in da where the big officers was, in the parlor, and I drops a curtsy, so, and I up, and told them about my Henry, they listenin' to my troubles just the same, as if I was white folks, and I says, what I come for is Beckus, if he got away, and got up north where you gemmen comes from, you might a seen him, maybe, and could tell me so as I could find him again. He was very little, and he had a SKR on his left wrists, and at the top of his forehead. Apostrophe apostrophe then they look mournful, and the gen'l says, how long since you losses him? Apostrophe apostrophe and I say, 13 year. Then the gen'l say, he wouldn't be little no mo now he's a man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I never thought o' that beefo. He was only that little feller to me it. I never thought about him growing up and being big. But I see it then. None o' the gemmen had run across him, so they couldn't do nothing for me. But all that time, do I didn't know it, my Henry was run off to the north, years and years, and he was a barber too, and worked for Issef. And by me, when the wow, come he ups and he says, I's done barberin', apostrophe he says, I's gwine to find my olay mammy, lessen she's dead. Apostrophe, apostrophe, so he sold out, and went to war day was recruitin', and hired hisself out to the colonel for his servant, and then he went all through the battles everywhere, hunting for his olay mammy. Yes, indeed, he'd hire to fust one officer and then another, till he'd ransacked the whole south. But you see, I didn't know nothing about this. How was I gwine to know it? Well, one night we had a big soldier ball. The soldiers dot Newbern was always having balls and carrying on. They had 'em in my kitchen, heaped so times, cassette was so big. Mind you, I was down on sich doins, because my place was with the officers, and it rasped me to have them common soldiers cavorting around in my kitchen like that. But I always stood around and kept things straight, I did. And sometimes they'd get my dander up, and then I'd make 'em clear that kitchen mine, I tell you. Well, one night, it was a Friday night, day comes a whole platoon F apostrophe M a nigger Richmond that was on guard at the house was headquarters, you know, and then I was just a billin' mad. I was just a boomin'. I swelled around, and swelled around. I just was itchin' for 'em to do something for to start me. And they was a waltzin' and a dancin'. My but they was havin' a time. And I just a swellin' and a swellin' up. Pooty soon, long comes sich a spruce young nigger a sailin' down the room with a yaller wench round the waces. And round and round and round they went, enough to make a body drunk to look at 'em. And when they got a braze o' me, they went to kino balancin' around fust on one leg and then on t'other, and smilin' at my big red turban, and makin' fun, and I ups and says get along with you. Rubbish. Apostrophe the young man's face kino changed, all of a sudden, for about a second, but then he went to smilin' agin, same as he was befo. Well, about this time, in comes some niggers that played music and belonged to the band, and they never could get along without putting on airs. And the very first air they put on that night, I lit into 'em. They laughed, and that made me wuss. The rest is oh the niggers got to laughing, and then my soul alive, but I was hot. My eye was just a blazin. I just straightened myself up so just as I is now. Plumb to the sailin', mose, and I digs my fists into my hips, and I says, look a he. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I says, I want you niggers to understand that I want on in the mash, to be fooled by trash. I's one o' the lay blue hen's chickens, I is. Apostrophe, and then I see that young man stand a starin' and stiff, looking kino up at the sailin' like he forget something, and couldn't remember it no mo'. Well, I just march on them niggers, so, looking like a gen, and they just cave away befo me, and out at the do. And as this young man a-going out, I hear him say to another nigger, Jim, apostrophe he says, you go long, and tell the cap'n I be on hand about 8 o'clock in the mornin'. They's something on my mind, apostrophe he says, I don't sleep no mo' this night. You go long, apostrophe he says, and leave me by my own self. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this was about 1 o'clock in the morning. Well, about 7, I was up and on hand, getting the officer's breakfast. I was a stoopin' down by the stove just so, same as if yo foot was the stove, and I'd opened the stove, do with my right hand so, pushing it back, just as I pushes yo foot and I just got the pan o' hot biscuits in my hand, and was about to raise up, when I see a black face come around under mine, and the eyes a looking up into mine, just as I's a looking up close under yo face now, and I just stopped right there, and never budged. Just gazed and gazed so, and the pan began to tremble, and all of a sudden I knowed. The pan dropped on the floor, and I grabbed his left hand and shoved back his sleeve, just so, as I's doing to you, and then I goes for his forehead and push the hair back so, and boy, I says, if you and my Henry, what is you doing with this welt on your wrists and that SKR on your forehead? The Lord God of heaven be praised, I got my own agon. H no miss 2C dash, I ain't had no trouble, and no joy. The Siamese Twins, written about 1868. I do not wish to write of the personal habits of these strange creatures solely, but also of certain curious details of various kinds concerning them, which, belonging only to their private life, have never crept into print. Knowing the twins intimately, I feel that I am peculiarly well qualified for the task I have taken upon myself. The Siamese twins are naturally tender and affectionate in disposition, and have clung to each other with singular fidelity throughout a long and eventful life. Even as children, they were inseparable companions, and it was noticed that they always seemed to prefer each other's society to that of any other person's. They nearly always played together, and, so accustomed was their mother to this peculiarity, that, whenever both of them chanced to be lost, she usually only hunted for one of them, satisfied that, when she found that one, she would find his brother somewhere in the immediate neighborhood. And yet these creatures were ignorant, and unlettered barbarians themselves and the offspring of barbarians, who knew not the light of philosophy and science. What a withering rebuke is this to our boasted civilization, with its quarrelings, its wranglings, and its separations of brothers. As men, the twins have not always lived in perfect accord, but still there has always been a bond between them which made them unwilling to go away from each other and dwell apart. They have even occupied the same house, as a general thing, and it is believed that they have never failed to even sleep together on any night since they were born. How surely do the habits of a lifetime become second nature to us? The twins always go to bed at the same time, but Chang usually gets up about an hour before his brother. By an understanding between themselves, Chang does all the indoor work and Eng runs all the errands. This is because Eng likes to go out. Chang's habits are sedentary. However, Chang always goes along. Eng is a Baptist, but Chang is a Roman Catholic. Still, to please his brother, Chang consented to be baptized at the same time that Eng was, on condition that it should not count. During the war they were strong partisans, and both fought gallantly all through the great struggle, Eng on the Union side and Chang on the Confederate. They took each other prisoners at Seven Oaks, but the proofs of capture were so evenly balanced in favor of each, that a general army court had to be assembled to determine which one was properly the captor, and which the captive. The jury was unable to agree for a long time, but the vexed question was finally decided, by agreeing to consider them both prisoners, and then exchanging them. At one time Chang was convicted of disobedience of orders, and sentenced to 10 days, in the guardhouse, but Eng, in spite of all arguments, felt obliged to share his imprisonment, notwithstanding he himself was entirely innocent. And so, to save the blameless brother from suffering, they had to discharge both from custody the just reward of faithfulness. Upon one occasion the brothers fell out about something, and Chang knocked Eng down, and then tripped, and fell on him, whereupon both clinched, and began to beat, and gouge each other without mercy. The bystanders interfered, and tried to separate them, but they could not do it, and so allowed them to fight it out. In the end both were disabled, and were carried to the hospital on one and the same shutter. Their ancient habit of going always together had its drawbacks, when they reached man's estate, and entered upon the luxury of courting. Both fell in love with the same girl. Each tried to steal clandestine interviews with her, but at the critical moment the other would always turn up. By and by Eng saw, with distraction, that Chang had won the girl's affections, and, from that day forth, He had to bear with the agony of being a witness to all their dainty billing and cooing. But with a magnanimity that did him infinite credit, he succumbed to his fate, and gave countenance and encouragement to a state of things that bade fair to sunder his generous heartstrings. He sat from 7 every evening until 2 in the morning, listening to the fond foolishness of the two lovers, and to the concussion of hundreds of squandered kisses for the privilege of sharing only one, of which he would have given his right hand. But he sat patiently, and waited, and gaped, and yawned, and stretched, and longed for 2 o'clock to come. And he took long walks with the lovers on moonlight evenings, sometimes traversing 10 miles, notwithstanding he was usually suffering from rheumatism. He is an inveterate smoker, but he could not smoke on these occasions, because the young lady was painfully sensitive to the smell of tobacco. And cordially wanted them married, and done with it. But although Chang often asked the momentous question, the young lady could not gather sufficient courage to answer it while Leng was by. However, on one occasion, after having walked some 16 miles, and sat up till nearly daylight, Leng dropped asleep from sheer exhaustion, and then the question was asked and answered. The lovers were married. All acquainted with the circumstance, applauded the noble brother-in-law. His unwavering faithfulness was the theme of every tongue. He had stayed by them all through their long and arduous courtship, and when at last they were married, he lifted his hands above their heads, and said with impressive unction, "Bless ye, my children, I will never desert ye." And he kept his word. Fidelity like this is all too rare in this cold world. By and by Aang fell in love with his sister-in-law's sister, and married her, and since that day they have all lived together, night and day, in an exceeding sociability which is touching, and beautiful to behold, and is a scathing rebuke to our boasted civilization. The sympathy existing between these two brothers is so close, and so refined that the feelings, the impulses, the emotions of the one are instantly experienced by the other. When one is sick, the other is sick. When one feels pain, the other feels it. When one is angered, the other's temper takes fire. We have already seen with what happy facility they both fell in love with the same girl. Now Chang is bitterly opposed to all forms of intemperance, on principle. But Aang is the reverse, for, while these men's feelings and emotions are so closely wedded, their reasoning faculties are unfettered. Their thoughts are free. Chang belongs to the Good Templars, and is a hard-working, enthusiastic supporter of all temperance reforms. But, to his bitter distress, every now and then Aang gets drunk, and, of course, that makes Chang drunk too. This unfortunate thing has been a great sorrow to Chang, for it almost destroys his usefulness in his favorite field of effort. As sure as he is to head a great temperance procession, Aang ranges up alongside of him, prompt to the minute, and drunk as a lord, but yet no more dismally and hopelessly drunk than his brother, who has not tasted a drop. And so the two begin to hoot and yell, and throw mud and bricks at the Good Templars. And, of course, they break up the procession. It would be manifestly wrong to punish Chang for what Aang does, and, therefore, the Good Templars accept the untoward situation, and suffer in silence and sorrow. They have officially and deliberately examined into the matter, and find Chang blameless. They have taken the two brothers, and filled Chang full of warm water and sugar and Aang full of whiskey, and in 20-5 minutes it was not possible to tell which was the drunkest. Both were as drunk as loons and on hot whiskey punches, by the smell of their breath. Yet all the while Chang's moral principles were unsullied, his conscience clear, and so all just men were forced to confess that he was not morally, but only physically, drunk. By every right, and by every moral evidence the man was strictly sober, and, therefore, it caused his friends all the more anguish to see him shake hands with the pump, and try to wind his watch with his night key. There is a moral in these solemn warnings, or, at least, a warning in these solemn morals, one or the other. No matter, it is somehow. Let us heed it. Let us profit by it. I could say more of an instructive nature about these interesting beings, but let what I have written suffice. Having forgotten to mention it sooner, I will remark in conclusion that the ages of the Siamese twins are respectively 51 and 53 years. Speech at the Scottish Banquet in London, written about 1872. On the anniversary festival of the Scottish Corporation of London on Monday evening, in response to the toast of the ladies, Mark Twain replied. The following is his speech as reported in the London Observer. I am proud, indeed, of the distinction of being chosen to respond to this especial toast, to the ladies, apostrophe or to women if you please, for that is the preferable term, perhaps. It is certainly the older, and therefore the more entitled to reverence, laughter. I have noticed that the Bible, with that plain, blunt honesty which is such a conspicuous characteristic of the Scriptures, is always particular to never refer to even the illustrious mother of all mankind herself as a lady, apostrophe but speaks of her as a woman, laughter. It is odd, but you will find it is so. I am peculiarly proud of this honor, because I think that the toast to women is one which, by right and by every rule of gallantry, should take precedence of all others of the army, of the navy, of even royalty itself perhaps, though the latter is not necessary in this day and in this land, for the reason that, tacitly, you do drink a broad general health to all good women when you drink the health of the Queen of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.